To be speaking on steps 2 and 3. So TJ, we'd like to invite you up here at this time, and we're looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
Well, good evening, everybody. Good evening, everybody. My name's TJ, and I'm an alcoholic. So, as I said last week, I'm not the sharpest tack in the box, so I need all the help I can get. So I've jotted down a lot of notes. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And when my first sponsor got me here, he said, do you believe in God? And I said, yeah. He said, we're good. Literally, that's what he said. And we moved on to step three, which made no sense to me whatsoever. I didn't understand what the insanity was, the insanity part of it. I just knew that I did believe in a God, in a power greater than myself. So, trying to take someone else through the steps was kind of difficult because not everybody believes in God. So my question to you is there anybody here that doesn't believe in God? Good. We're done. Okay, nowhere in the big book does it tell us how to work steps 1 and 2. It's not there. And steps 1 and 2 are pretty, from my experience, is pretty simple and easy, and damn difficult. All it really is a gathering of information about you. That's it. That's all you're doing is gathering information. The doctor's opinion and the first 4 chapters are devoted to 3 pertinent ideas. And the big book even tells us that in the 5th chapter. A, we were alcoholic and couldn't manage our own lives. B, that no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God couldn't would if he were sought. Some pretty powerful ideas here, which I completely overlooked the first time I went through the steps. And I think I'm pretty sure that I said this last week for those of you who weren't here last week. I use 4 different books to do this. I use the 12 and 12. The big book, naturally. And then I used this book called Carry This Message by Joe McHugh, and also The Steps We Took by Joe McHugh. Now, the Joe McHugh books are not conference-approved literature, and I don't care. Step 2 simply means that we can now look for a solution. Everybody knows what insanity is, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. We've all heard that 1,000 times. But what is sanity? So if I'm now sane, what does that mean? And this is the part for me that just made so much sense. Sanity is the ability to see the truth. That's all it is. The ability to see the truth. My truth. What I see in front of me. Believing when it talks about came to believe, believing is a choice. So when you wake up in the morning, there's a whole lot of choices that you can make. And believing is a choice. And here's one of the things that just really grabbed my attention the first time I read it. Whatever you believe, you are going to become, good or bad. So for years, I believed that I wasn't worth anything. We have children here, so I just didn't believe I was worth a nickel. Therefore, I became not worth anything. Okay, so whatever you believe, good or bad, you will become. I didn't believe I could stay sober. I couldn't believe that I could do a lot of things. As it turns out, those were lies that I told myself all the time because I didn't believe. And I chose not to believe. I chose not to believe that I was a good student in school. Therefore, I became a very bad student in school. When I graduated from high school, I could barely read. I used to tell people I couldn't read. That wasn't true. It's just that I could barely read. I was reading about the third grade level, which meant getting through the comics was difficult. Getting through the big book was damn near impossible. So, whenever our lives are in a mess, we've been believing something that is untrue and making decisions based and making decisions and taking actions based on our beliefs. So now I'm making decisions and taking actions on things that are not true. I'm insane. I'm telling myself lies. I don't have the ability to see the truth because I've chosen not to see the truth. So what we have to do is believe differently. When we believe differently, we can choose differently. We can act differently, and we can become different. So I went through this, going through step two, coming to believe in a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. So I first had to believe that there was a power greater than myself. Again, there's nothing in the big book that says how to work step two. You are just gathering information about yourself. And one of the things that helped me so much, especially when I was a couple of years sober, was I had a sponsor that said, just take a look. Just be willing to take a look around you and see what's going on. And see if you can find things that cannot be explained. And when I did that, I could find a whole lot of things that I personally couldn't explain. I may have believed, but I just couldn't explain it. And he said, that's your higher power working in your life. I wasn't sure I believed that. I remember it was when I first came in, my sponsor told me that I wasn't supposed to hang around with my rehab buddies, and I wasn't supposed to hang around with the people that I had hung around with before. And I said, yeah, but all of my friends, they're very supportive. They'll be helpful as hell. And I'm like, you know, I believe these people are my friends and they'll be helpful. So I was bowling on the company bowling team, which is where I had my last drink and my last drunk. So I'm now back to bowling again, and my sponsor says, maybe this isn't such a great idea. And I said, oh, come on. They're my friends. You're bowling in a bar. I know, but they're my friends. I'll be fine. They won't let me take a drink. Trust me. Now, as I said last week, I was on antabuse. So I knew that I wasn't going to worry about taking a drink. My friends had my back. So it came time for beer frame. And I didn't lose, so I didn't have to worry about it. And I said, I'll take a 7-Up. Okay. So a couple of my buddies, you know, there's five of us. Three of them had beers. I had a 7-Up, and another guy had a gin and something. I don't know. And so when I sat down to drink my 7-Up, something distracted me. And next thing I know, the guy that ordered the gin and tonic or whatever it was that he had spits his drink all over the table. And he's going, oh my God, this is flat 7-Up. And I thought, And everybody just started laughing their asses off. And I realized what had happened. They'd switched drinks. They wanted to see what was going to happen if I took a drink. And they all knew I was on antabuse. They were just going to see if I'd get sick. These were my friends. This was something I couldn't... This was my higher power working in my life. This was my higher power doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, showing me in no uncertain terms that I shouldn't be hanging around with these friends. Now, I had someone tell me about that, but I wasn't going to listen to them. But I'll listen now. Okay? So, we'll move on to step 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. I don't even have that written right, but that's okay. So, how do we make a decision? That's what it says. We're going to make a decision. The Joe McHugh books talk about three frogs on a log. One of the frogs decides he's going to jump off the log. How many frogs are left?
Three.
All three of them are still there because they just made a decision. They didn't take any actions. That's what it says. Okay. So, in order to make a decision, we have to gather facts and determine a course of action based on interpretation of those facts as we perceive them. Oh, let's just see here. Then we're going to go to the... Well, maybe we're not. Oh, yes. Wrong page. Wrong book. Out of page 61 of the big book. A life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. So, all my life, I've tried to be the director of this show. We'll call it TJ's show. And it's never gone off really well. I mean, honestly, it usually turns out to be a shit show, to be quite honest with you. So, making a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Now, if you noticed, I stopped at those two special words in there. It says our will and our lives. What is our will? Our will is our thinking. Our lives are our actions. We'll move on to another book. Maybe. Or maybe not. A person's actions are a manifestation of his thinking. His will, a person's actions are a manifestation of his thinking. His will. Remember, I said that his will is his thinking. If some part of his will is out of control, he's going to behave in an unacceptable manner. Imagine that. Maybe his security instinct is out of balance. Really. This could cause him to steal. Until this part of self is nurtured and straightened out, he will always go back to jail. Self is the root of the problem. At least one of our natural and useful instincts is out of balance. And that was such a big part for me, is that all of these things are part of my instincts, our basic instincts. Our basic instincts. This comes out of the big book, or out of the 12 and 12. Our basic instincts, if men and women didn't exert themselves to be secure in their persons, made no effort to harvest food or structure shelter, there would be no survival. These are our security instincts. If they didn't reproduce, the earth wouldn't be populated. These are sex instincts. Somewhere along the line, we are going to talk about that too. If there is no social instincts, if man cared nothing for the society of one another, there would be no society. These are our social instincts. These desires for sex relations and for material and emotional security and for companionship are perfectly necessary and right and surely God-given. We're supposed to have them. Yes, these instincts, so necessary for our existence, often far exceed their proper functions. They drive us, dominate us, and insist upon ruling our lives. All the troubles we have come from our basic instincts out of control. From the 12 Steps, 12 Traditions, page 42 and 43. Got lots of time. So I didn't understand what basic instincts were when I was reading about them in the 12 and 12. It didn't make any sense to me whatsoever. And if you're reading these steps and for the first time and you're going through them all, trust me, at least for me, it was a it was a mess of words that didn't make any sense whatsoever. I just didn't understand them. And they talked about instincts. Now I know a little bit about some instincts, like a dog's. Like we had a couple of Australian shepherds. We didn't raise them to be herding dogs. We didn't teach them to be herding dogs. It was bred into them. They were just herding dogs. That was their instinct. So as soon as we got them, you know, if we were playing out in the backyard, they wanted to herd us. Especially me. They thought it was fun. The oldest one, the biggest one, if I wasn't paying attention to him, we got him in the wintertime, so I'm out shoveling my driveway, and his instinct was he wanted me to do something else, so he nipped me in the ass. Once was okay. Don't do that again. Twice, you're now in trouble. Okay, but that was his instinct. He learned his instinct was to use his teeth to hurt me, to do what I wanted, to what he wanted to do to me, or wanted me to do. And that's what I was doing to all those other people. My instincts were so run amok that I wanted all these other people to do what I wanted them to do. Unfortunately, I couldn't bite them all. So it was my instincts that were so out of whack. So when you have a product that won't work right, the best place to take it to get fixed is back to the people who made it in the first place. Does that make sense? When we have a problem with human will, we can take it back to the Creator who created it in the first place. So step three is a simple concept. We surrender. Didn't we just do that in the last step? Didn't we just surrender in the last step? Well, that was the first couple of steps. We've been surrendering this whole damn time. Now they want us to surrender again. I can't fix it. I'm powerless. And we take our will back to its maker and say, I've decided to let you fix it. That's turning your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand Him. But the decision is going to take action. some action on our part to do what we have to do to bring our society or our sobriety about. Okay? So we're going to have to do some work now. Our basic instincts have made us dishonest. We do something dishonest, then we fear that somebody's going to find out. This fear dominates our lives and blocks us from God. So since we want God to direct our lives and we have to get the fear out of our minds, when our basic instincts are out of control, at least the least little thing that somebody says or does that hurts us, then we have a resentment. This resentment blocks us from God. So we can see how these things emanate from our defects of character from the inside out. All human problems come from our trying to satisfy one of the desires that make up our basic instincts. Our problem is we don't know how to live. And if you come back next week, we'll talk about doing a fourth step inventory to figure out what really blocks us from God. I think I'm supposed to shut up now.
Thank you. How about now? There we go. All right, so now we have time for questions and answers from our audience.
Hi, TJ. Thank you very much. I've been looking forward to this since last week. I thought last week was excellent, and I really appreciate you sharing your insights tonight. I like particularly what you said about the will, our will and our lives, and how you took that apart. I think that's a gift that you have to be able to make some of those individual concepts come alive, so I really appreciate that. Regarding that, you shared that story about the bowling alley, and it kind of, in my mind, that was something that you changed in your life. That was action that you did. You had to get away from those friends. Does anything come to mind that you changed in terms of your will, your thinking, as you went through this journey?
Yeah, I mean the first thing I kind of remembered was that I thought I pretty much knew it all. I mean, what are you laughing about? I pretty much thought I knew everything there was to really know. After all, I was 32 years of age when I came into this program, so I thought I knew it all. So the first thing I can remember actually thinking to myself was, you know, these people in AA, they might be right. My thinking might be a little messed up. And if I'm not going to do everything they say, okay, but at least I could run it past people and get other people's perspectives about some of the things that I was thinking about. Does that answer your question? Okay, so yeah.
Who else has a question for TJ?
Hey, TJ, I've got a question here on Zoom. Thank you so much. I heard some things tonight I really needed to hear. Thank you for your wisdom. But when you were quoting from the big book, I went to that page. And at the very end of step three, before now we launched on a course of vigorous action, it says, "This was only a beginning, though, if honestly and humbly made, an effect sometimes it's a very great one, was felt at once. And I have never heard anyone speak about that feeling at that they had, although I have heard people talk about crying afterwards and what have you, particularly over Dr. Bob's house. Did you feel any great effect from taking your third step?
Not the first time. About my second sponsor, we took the third step in his living room. And I guess I kind of failed to mention about that. Is that, and this is how I take other people today through the steps. After we get done reading all this stuff that I'm going to take them all through, and we read all the stories and all that stuff, at the end of it, I say, okay, now we're going to actually take this step. And we get on our knees and we say the third step prayer. So the first time I actually did that with it was my second sponsor, that had such an effect on me that I felt like, okay, now, it was kind of like I was at that, at the door. I'd been knocking on the door for a long time, but now all of a sudden, I had my hand on that doorknob and I was about to open it up. And that's what I felt like. And I thought, if I take one step through this door, I'm going to actually have to do something. So I hesitated. But then after saying the third step prayer, I felt like it was okay to walk through that door. Does that make sense?
Yes, and that's beautiful. Thank you so much for that explanation.
Thanks. Who else has a question for TJ?
Hi, TJ.
Hi, darling.
Laura Alcoholi. So, yeah, we go way back, even before I came in here. I think you just came in here when we knew each other. And then you were always right there for me when I came in, and I always really appreciated that. So thank you. And thank you for what you said tonight, too. It's what I needed to hear, too. My question's a two-part question. So the first part is, you talked about, it's really like the self-fulfilling prophecy, like we become what we believe or we don't believe. So when did you believe that, you know, that you could live a sober life and a happy life? And then the second part is, like, did that, you talked about the sanity and insanity, and I loved how you illustrated that. So when you came to believe, did you see that as like coming to sanity too, or was it a different time? Did you follow me?
Yes, I did. But let's go back to the first question.
Yeah.
What was the first question?
I'll talk really slow.
Okay. Let's just do one at a time.
When did you find that you believed that you could live a sober life?
I think I had a couple of years when I realized that I could do this, but that didn't mean I wanted to do this. Okay? If that makes any sense. It probably wasn't until I actually had probably 9 or 10 years in the program before I actually wanted to live a sober life. Okay? That I wanted to live instead of saying I wanted to live a sober life, I wanted to live a spiritual life. It was probably it was when I was going through the steps with my second sponsor that I actually thought that. So what was your second question?
So based on that answer, Would you say that that is when you felt like you had sane thinking? Because you talked about the difference, about being able to see the truth and that sanity.
I thought I was becoming sane, yes. There are times today when I can tell you that I am not a sane person. And my wife's back there giggling like crazy. She can tell you that there are times when I am not a sane person. That I honestly, there are times I don't want to see the truth. But it always smacks me in the face, and then I know. Then I can see it. But first I have to, you know, it's kind of like working the first three steps all over again every time something comes up, okay? And eventually, you know, the little white flag has to come up and go, okay, I surrender again. And then I can begin to see the truth. And I talked a little bit about this last week, about putting a puzzle together and how you have all the pieces spread out and you have this one piece and you pick it up and you go to put it in that space and it doesn't fit. And you go, okay, it's not the right piece. So you put it back in the same place. And then you see that piece again, you pick it up and you put it in that same place harder this time, and it still doesn't fit. And you take it out, and you finally see the truth. Okay, and the truth is, this isn't the right piece. And don't put it back in the same spot. Put it over here, out of the way, so you don't see it again. That's sanity to me. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Hi, TJ. I'm Bridget. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Bridget.
And just, I have to start off with a comment, please. When I came into the rooms the first year I was in the rooms, you were conducting a class on the steps based on Joe McHugh out of the Fear of You Meeting Place, and I'll never forget it. And I appreciated it so much. And I didn't know, you know, I'm a semi-educated person. All these instincts was like, wait a minute. It was a lot to take in. But I remember you saying it then, and you said it again today, that when you first came into the program, you were aware that you had a third grade level reading of comprehension and understand. How were you able to work through coming from that level to be able to not only read but to really be able to comprehend what this was all about? Because that is a huge mountain for you.
How was I able to do that?
Yeah.
I haven't got it. I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I don't know.
Okay, it's a
I mean, it as far as my reading skills, I'm going to tell you, it took me a year to read the first 164 pages of the Big Book. Seriously, it took me a year. And I think reading that book made it easier for me. And today, I can tell you that in the morning I play games on my phone. They're word games. And I do that religiously every morning to try and keep myself somewhat sharp. And I also learned to love to read. So most of the time I don't remember what the hell I read, but I honestly can't tell you that I know the answer to that, other than it's certainly a gift from God for me.
I'm an alcoholic. TJ, you just made my whole night. What I heard from you tonight is just so wonderful. So I want to ask you more on a personal level, because you have a wife in recovery, and you know what I have. So, do you ever find yourself in a position where, because I have, when I think my sane thinking is actually working, and that's my thinking telling me that, but have you ever had somebody else say, you're still crazy, there's something wrong with your thinking?
Yeah, she's sitting right back there.
So, and the perceptions of that, because sometimes I question things, so I wonder if I'm lying to myself or maybe I just need more work.
Well,
I
think, at least for me, when those type of situations come up, I have this guy I call, and he sort of straightens me out sometimes. Sometimes he just tells me to shut up. But sometimes he does kind of straightens out my thinking. Most of the time, at least for me, what I know for sure is that if I'm listening, especially when I go to a meeting, and my home group is the Back to Basics meeting, on meets on Monday and Friday at 9 a.m. in Fairview. When I go there, the topic of discussions are unbelievably pertinent to my life. I don't know how they know what's going on in my life, but every time, I swear to God, every time I go to that meeting on Mondays and Fridays at 9 a.m. in the morning in Fairview, best meeting in the world, the topics of discussions just seem to fit perfectly for me. That's God doing for me what I can't do for myself.
Any other questions for TJ? Anybody else on Zoom?
Going once, going twice, thank you.
Oh, wait. Kevin.
I knew it.
Kevin.
I just knew it.
TJ, thanks for coming out and doing this. I just want to remind everybody, next week you're going to be out of town. So
that's right. I will be out of town.
And we have a guest speaker who's going to be speaking on the three legacies. So they're also going to be giving that talk at the Chautauqua Institute. So should be interesting.
Thanks for that announcement, Kevin.
You're welcome. The next thing is
no.
You know, you were talking, you talk about these first three steps, you know, and the internal struggles that you had with each one of those. When did somebody else outside of, like maybe Howard or, you know, or somebody else in your family or somebody around you that said, you've changed? Because we don't notice it that much. Somebody from the outside, whether it be...
You know, I can tell you where it came from.
Okay.
It came from work. When I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I am not really proud of this, but I was not the nicest guy in the whole wide world. And in fact, the first 2 years of my sobriety, my nickname was Little Hitler. And I was just one mean SOB. And a few years later, and it did take years, someone finally said, my God, I don't know what happened to you, but somewhere along the line, you've changed a lot. And I think it actually came from my boss. So. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, that's great. That's okay. Exactly what I was looking for. When did your parents notice that you changed?
I don't think they ever did.
Huh.
My dad had Alzheimer's, so
right.
He didn't notice much of anything. And I came in at
32. I can't really, I guess I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay.
When did Linda notice?
She hasn't.
Any final questions?
So, TJ, you said you kneel down with your sponsees and do the third step prayer. I guess I'm not sure. It sounded like you did it like after you go through all the steps and read everything. You don't do, or do you do it at the completion of step three, moving into step four?
Yes, that's exactly when I do it. And it even says in the big book, right after the third step prayer, next, and it's exactly, and it's like right now. Now we do it.
Perfect. Anybody else? Thank you, TJ.
Thank you.